Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 199, Step Into Rebels. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Grand Admiral Thrawn to my Bendu. We have Carl LeClaire.
I am far more legendary, aren't I, Jason?
Yes, but I love the Bendu. Oh, he's so great.
You love Tom Baker.
Yes, I do. So, but I do love the character as well. So, oh, I'm so happy Rebels is back.
Hey, you know, that was a very exciting new episode to kick off the new season. I'll definitely say that.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, I'm mostly excited this is episode 199. That's just crazy to me. And I'm really glad that, you know, Disney XD and Lucasfilm has purposely started Rebels Season 3 to coincide just within a week of our 205-year anniversary, you know.
Right.
It all kind of just seems to be falling into place for us, Jason.
It does. It does.
Which I'm not going to complain about. I appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they did it specifically for us.
Yeah. The season of Rebels brought to you by the Wampa's Lair. I think it's in there somewhere. It flashes for like a millisecond. Right. But yeah, Jason, we're back at it. Another season of Rebels. A lot to discuss, I think, from this episode. Obviously, there are a ton of Rebels podcasts out there right now. We're sure you guys are getting all up to date on, you know, we've got like Rebels Recon over, I think, Rebel Force Radio. Is that what their version is? Mm-hmm. And then, yep, you know, we've got our friends Matt Cranky and Mike Cohen with their Rebels podcast. And I think there's even Rebels Roundtable here at Star Wars Report. So there's plenty of Rebels.
Yeah, there was. And then, of course, Steve Glosson and Teresa Delgado do Rebel Yell on their Disney Vault Talk podcast.
I love that name.
And everyone else in the under the sun is doing their own Rebels episode right now. So we figured we'd not stand out and do the same exact thing.
Right. Yeah. I will say there's obviously plenty of other great places to get info on this fantastic series, but doesn't mean we're not going to give it a stab, does it, Jason?
Exactly.
But before we get into season 3 premiere of Rebels, we do have a pretty epic matchup left over from our last episode. And what's interesting, Jason, is I think for the first 2 years of the This Is Madness tournament on StarWars.com, this was the final matchup, which was Yoda versus Vader. And I know the first year Yoda won, the second year I think Vader won. Is that right? No. Did
Obi-Wan beat Vader?
Obi-Wan beat Vader the second year. Yeah, that's right. Vader lost two times in a row, and then Vader won the third year. And who did he beat this past year?
I think
year?
It was Obi-Wan.
Was it Obi-Wan? Okay.
And then Luke and Vader faced off this year. Has it been 3 or 4 years since they've done it?
Oh, geez. I thought there was only three. Maybe it has been four. Whatever. But anyway, this the Yoda-Vader matchup was from the very first year of this particular segment that StarWars.com does during March Madness, which is a lot of fun, and obviously taken right from the Wampa's Lair.
Of course.
But yeah, no, Jason, I was really kind of surprised, to be honest, about what our Larians had to say. So what did they say?
All right. Well, we got quite a few responses. I think 20 in all from our Larian, so that's awesome. Jeffrey Beaumont on Facebook says, "Holy crap, this is a hard decision. You really want us to think. I'm saying Yoda wins due to his knowledge of the Force." Clark Wilson says, "Yoda wins. Vader isn't fast enough to keep up with him." Austin Chenal. Yoda, his ally is the Force. And a powerful ally it is. Kyle Taylor. Yoda held his own against Sidious and easily knocked out two royal guards. They're handpicked by the Emperor himself and put through extreme training regiments. If Yoda can best them, lift next wing near the end of his long life, he could probably beat Vader without even using a lightsaber. Dave Laidlaw says, Yoda seemed to struggle with Dooku and Anakin, soon to become Vader, had his way with Dooku. So, I pick Vader. Jeffrey Fishbach, Yoda. Jessica Baker, Y-O-D-A, all the way. I think that means Yoda. Borodori MacArthur says Yoda. Ian Statsny, Yoda's fighting style involves a lot of speedy jumping, flipping, and bouncing. However, Darth Vader, more machine than man, relies on sheer power. So I fear that Yoda would be able to get in a finishing strike before Vader could overpower him. Yoda wins. Eliezer Rodriguez, Yoda. Mark Young, I would say it depends on what time. If during Return of the Jedi, I'd say Vader, as Yoda was already on his way to join the Force. During Revenge of the Sith, I definitely say Yoda would win. Tough one this week, guys. So I actually gave a vote to each for Mark's response there. Thomas Davis, Vader would win. He'd probably have to sacrifice a limb in the process, but he'd beat Yoda. Ubaidullah Abdul Malik, assuming he was still in fighting condition. And Philip Liebold says, end of the prequel era before Vader fell into lava, I'd say Yoda. We also got a couple of Twitter responses. At Damien Kreese 1, Yoda is fast and nimble. He can take out Vader quickly. At Dewey the Mailman, Darth Vader, his evil and power is what helped keep Yoda hidden all those years. At Lowry Neal, Yoda, just, he will edge it out. At Reeves House, Vader, if Yoda could have won, why send Luke? And then finally, we got an email from Tim who said, Yoda is much stronger in the Force, and I doubt that he would end up in a saber duel with Vader if he didn't want to. So that gives us a final Larian tally of 15 for Yoda and 5 for Vader. What say you, Carl?
15 for Yoda, 5 for Vader. Right?
Yes.
How many votes does Mun count for?
Just one, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, then, in that case, I give it to Luke. no, actually, I was thinking about this a lot because, you know, obviously in StarWars.com's little segment, it's I think it's more about popularity. It's obviously not about fighting prowess.
Right.
Which makes sense because some of their matchups wouldn't even, like, be fair. Like, you know, I'm trying to think of like Sebulba versus Vader. Yeah, okay, I'm pretty sure Vader's going to win that. Well, in both popularity and in reality.
Right.
So here's this actually leads me to a line of thought to a dangerous place that takes us. You know,
we'll play.
So here we go. Buckle up. Something I was thinking about. At the end of Revenge of the Sith, Yoda and Obi-Wan could have probably teamed up and together, I think, fighting together, I could see them actually taking out definitely Vader and probably even the Emperor, right? Like, if you read the novel, which, again, I prefer the novel to the movie. In the novel, like, Yoda kind of gets his butt handed to him. In the movie, though, it makes it a little bit more even matched. Like, Sidious, you know, wins by, you know, like, next to nothing. Like, it's a very close match. So, obviously, the film is canon. If you take that, right, like, Yoda definitely does very well, but just doesn't have what it takes. But I feel like with Obi-Wan fighting with him, that could happen. And the reason I think they don't actually go back to combat either of them, even when Vader starts to come to prominence, and, like, you know, because I think obviously Obi-Wan thought Vader was dead on Mustafar. Mm-hmm. When they find out that they're back, I think the reason, though, that they don't go after them isn't so much of whether they could actually take them down, but I think it's the reality of if they do, then what? Right, like, the galaxy hates the Jedi. Like, Palpatine did a great job of kind of blaming them for everything. They were the scapegoats, so the galaxy hates the Jedi. They would most likely see Palpatine as a martyr. So that's an even scarier thing. So I think Yoda and Obi-Wan, you know, that initial push, right? Like, when they first go after them, if they had succeeded, yes, like, the Senate could have taken control and figured out what to do. But at that point of the game, they can't really go after them because I think they're both aware that this is a problem that needs to be fixed, like, kind of naturally from the inside out. Like, the galaxy is going to have to rise up, and the best we can offer them is the Skywalker children, which we will train when the time comes. All that tangent to basically say, in their primes, yeah, I definitely give it to Yoda. Because Vader is... I actually just finished rereading Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader by James Luceno, which takes place, like the novel itself takes place a few months after Revenge of the Sith. And obviously, yes, it's just Legends now, but I still think it's a fantastic novel. And like we hear, right, like Vader in that novel, like Vader goes up against like these unknown Jedi Knights and Padawans. And like, yes, he kills them all, but he actually like is he takes quite a bit of damage in all those fights. And it's very obvious that he's lost a lot of his power. And he's also, well, he's also getting used to fighting in that suit. But I think, you know, Darth Vader, as he stands in the suit, is certainly not nearly as powerful as Anakin could have been. You know, he's inhibited by the suit itself. He's much slower. And like you watch Yoda fight, you know, Dooku and Attack of the Clones. He's going to be all over Vader, just like slashing that suit to pieces. And there's not a whole lot Vader can do. When Vader fights, you know, again, he's fighting like basically like the leftovers. So of course he's going to dominate, and he is still very powerful. But I think Yoda is just as powerful, if not more powerful than Yoda in, or than Vader in the Force. And he's certainly a much quicker duelist. So I do give it to Yoda as well. But I just wanted to say all that stuff for the sake of saying it. Well, what do you think? What do you say, Jason?
Well, real quick, before I say anything, as we were doing this, we got one more response come in on our Twitter feed as we are recording. So we're updating this live, I suppose. At Jedi Jack, our buddy Jackson, who just had his Tales of Larian episode, weighed in. And voted for Yoda to win, saying that Vader is too slow and all that armor. So, but all that being said, I guess we're going to go to my answer here.
Yeah.
And this is tough. I mean, I thought going in, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it would be so-and-so. But then I really started thinking about it. And while you brought up some very good points, I'm just not sure. I think Yoda is definitely more suited to fighting someone like the Emperor than he would have been fighting someone like Anakin Vader. Because Yoda and Sidious are on sort of the same playing field. They have the same sort of playbook. They play on these grand scales and, you know, with galaxy-wide implications, so to speak, because, you know, obviously, you know, that's very symbolic in their duel in the Senate as, you know, Sidious metaphorically and literally throws the Senate at Yoda. But the thing with Vader and Anakin is that he fights on a much more personal thing. And in doing, if you had Vader at the height of his power and then Yoda at the height of his power, which we're going to assume is going to be somewhere around the Clone Wars era. I think Vader would blame Yoda for a lot of stuff that happened to him. And I think that rage would surprise and overwhelm Yoda. Because I don't think Yoda would be expecting it. And so I think I'm going to come down on the other side. I think I'm going to do something I didn't think I would do. I'm going to say Vader on this one. So that gives us a final tally of 17 for Yoda and 6 for Vader.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, though, Jason. Because look at that, you know, that when when Yoda first shows up to fight the Emperor in Revenge of the Sith, and he gets blasted by that initial thing of Force lightning, he is like, he's kind of taken aback by it, by how powerful that is. So, yeah, I think Vader has a lot of, he's got a lot of power there that might very well just overwhelm Yoda.
Yeah, and especially, for how much Vader would blame Yoda and the Jedi for the situation he's in.
Yeah.
And then everyone says, you know, obviously Vader, yes, he's slower. He's more machine than man. But, you know, he still holds his own against much quicker opponents like Ahsoka and Kanan and Ezra. Not to say that they're more skilled than he is, but they're much faster than he is. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in Rebels. And I think, you know, you never can rule out Vader's force choke. So I don't know how Yoda would have been able to respond to that. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just glad that I'm not the one who would have to write the the outcome of such a duel if yeah. it actually happened.
Yeah.
Because I don't know exactly where I'd go. But as of right now, I think I'd give it to Vader.
That's cool. I like it.
So, all right. Well, we've got a cool poll for you guys at the end of this episode. It's a little bit different than some of the other ones we've done, but we'll save that for after our topic.
Yeah, let's talk Rebels.
Yes.
Initial thoughts, Jason. What did you think when you first watched it?
Oh, man. Well, my initial thought was, oh my gosh, I'm so glad Rebels is back. Because, you know, they've been keeping us in suspense since that season finale for season two. You know, what happens next for so long? And it's just nice to have new Star Wars back on the screen. That was my initial thought. But of the episode itself, I thought it was really good. It was definitely one that's setting up a lot of different things for the season as a whole. And I think what surprised me most about it was just how much of a long game it looks like they're going to play with this season. With some of these threads that it looks like we're kicking off here. It looks like there's going to be quite a few things that are going to carry on throughout the season, at least, you know, on and off or partway through the season, depending on how they go with it. We'll get into more of those details later. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I think Ezra and Kanan right now are still the two most compelling characters in the season premiere. So I can't wait to talk about that here. But you, Carl, what about you? Initial thoughts.
The initial thought was, yeah, kind of like you. I'm so glad Rebels is back. But I'll be honest, I was actually a little disappointed in the episode. For starters, it was not anywhere as good as the season two premiere, which is fair. You know, I mean, having Vader show up in the season two premiere, having him fight Kanan and Ezra, having Ahsoka realize that it's Anakin, that was a lot, right? Like, that was, right. I didn't necessarily expect it to live up to that. But you're right. I think it was more of a, it kind of akin to this, the series premiere in season one, which was very much like a setup episode of here's kind of what has happened to our characters and here's all these new things that will have to be addressed this season. So I watched it Sunday night, and I had like a really, really, really bad day all Sunday. It was just like this horrible day. So I was kind of watching it with like not the best mindset. And when it was over, I was like, okay, that really wasn't anything special. And then I really got angry about Ezra again because I did not like how stinking powerful he was. And I actually was like, I was just like tearing into it late that night to Joe Hogan. And Joe was just like kind of like shooting everything I had to say down. And, you know, now that I've had a day to decompress and also had like that crappy day behind me, I can honestly say I did really enjoy it. I'm excited to see where it goes. I am very excited about Kanan's journey. I'm so pumped that Thrawn's in it. I think it was a really good tease of him. I love that he wasn't in it a ton, but I love that he's being introduced and the context in which he's introduced is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I'm excited that it's back. I think we're going to get some really fun Star Wars TV show series again, because that's what Rebels has consistently been, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I was just a little disappointed because it was nowhere near the epicness of the season two finale or premiere. And again, I immediately had a horrible taste in my mouth with the way the episode begins with Ezra, aka the new chosen one. So Joe Hogan did like address some of that for me, which I appreciated him talking me down. Yeah, let's get into kind of the nooks and the crannies of this episode.
Yeah. And I can understand your, you know, little bit of a disappointment about it not living up to the season two premiere, but of course it's dealing with a much smaller scale subject matter,
right,
than season two did.
Yeah.
Season two's opener definitely was more galaxy impacting. And while there's definitely things that are set up in this episode that could have galaxy wide implications, it's more of a slow burn than, you know, hit you upside the head with it.
Yeah. And something I want to address, just a quick side note, because I had a really nice conversation today with our buddy Jazz. He and I were chatting for a little while today. And, we were both talking about how, we're still both more excited about Episode 8 than we are Rogue One, even though Rogue One's like a month and a half away, 2 months away, whatever. But then, you know, talking a little bit about how, you know, kind of in hindsight now, Force Awakens isn't as awesome of a Star Wars film as a lot of us would have, you know, would have hoped. But then I kind of said to Jazz, and he agreed. I was like, you know, I was like, but at the same time, I was like, it's important to remember what it was like when we watched that the first time. I've never had a more emotional response to a Star Wars film in my life. I had never seen a movie in the theaters as much as I saw Force Awakens. I loved it every single time I went. So I'm saying all that to say that the one thing I forgot to do when I watched this episode of Rebels was go at it like I've gone to every other Star Wars thing, which is open-minded, just ready to have a good adventure and have a fun time. And I think when I go back and rewatch this episode, I'll be able to enjoy it more, because that's the thing. Like when I saw Force Awakens, I just thought it was a fantastic film. I absolutely loved it. And now, like, yeah, I can see like definitely some of the flaws, some of the lack of originality. But at the end of the day, that movie like enchanted me. And I think it's, you know, and it still has that ability. It's important sometimes, I think, for us as hardcore Star Wars fans to just remember kind of the essence of Star Wars, which is just that sense of like that joy and excitement. Mm-hmm. And that was
quick question, Carl.
Yeah.
Did the movie enchant you, or did Daisy Ridley enchant you?
Kylo Ren enchanted me.
Ah.
No, definitely.
As he murdered his father.
Yeah, that, oh man, I've never cried harder at a movie in my life. But yeah, no, it was, so anyway, I just, you know, I see that as a more skeptical Star Wars fan than I thought I was, which really only is coming out in Rebels and specifically with Ezra, which I know we'll get into a little bit more in this episode. But I think at the end of the day, for Star Wars fans like me, and I know there's a lot of them out there, and I think that's okay. Like, as Star Wars fans, we don't have to love everything. That does not make you a bad Star Wars fan. You know, and I don't like when people say like, oh, if you don't like that, you're not a good Star Wars fan. Well, that's kind of BS. You can still be a good fan and dislike things. Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you dislike something and try and tear it apart for everybody else.
Exactly. You know, just because it's not for you, does it, like, I really don't like Ezra's story, but I'm not going to sit here for the next hour and say why you shouldn't like it either. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm open to other ideas. Like Joe had some great things to say about it. And I'm definitely open to hearing those. But just because I don't like a particular thing, I know doesn't mean it makes it bad and doesn't mean that others won't love it. Jar Jar is a perfect example, right? Like a lot of people love Jar Jar and some people just obviously hated him. But just because you hate him doesn't make it a bad character.
Right.
So anyway, I say all that just to say I think it's important for us as Star Wars fans to when we come into something new with Star Wars, and we are in an era of new Star Wars, right? Like George is gone. That is the biggest loss to the Star Wars community. And with George gone, things are going to be different. Force Awakens was a different Star Wars film. Rebels is a little bit different from Clone Wars, and it's going to become more different, I think, now that Dave Filoni looks like he's kind of shifting his role into something new, probably bigger and more exciting.
Which is, I'm glad, because I think Dave Filoni is kind of going to become the new George Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was George's apprentice, if you think about it.
He really was. And if Dave Filoni is moving up to bigger and better things in Lucasfilm, more power to him, and please give me more.
Yeah.
So, apparently he made several visits to the set of Rogue One.
Oh, cool.
And I think maybe even Episode 8. So,
I'd love to see him do a Star Wars standalone movie, specifically an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
Mm.
Filoni would just crush it. He'd be so
good. So. Yes. Yes. Anyway.
But anyway, yeah. So
let's get to the actual episode.
Yeah, let's get to that actual episode, which is, you know, it's a fun Rebels episode. And it didn't take long for me, like, even that, like, that very beginning when they're sneaking around. Again, this is what I've always loved about Rebels, is it takes those little scenarios I remember playing when I played Star Wars as a kid, like, whether it was with my action figures or with my cousin, you know, running around his house, you know, just like these simple, like, oh, we've got to steal these plans, or oh, we've got to sabotage this base. Rebels does that. The plots, a lot of the typical plot for the episodes are kind of just like these fun little stories, and then they build character within it, which is, again, like, that's fantastic, you know. They're not like these intricate plots necessarily, and I like that about Rebels. So right from the get-go, you know, just seeing our characters, and again, like, they are very much a family unit, which I really love. Like, that's mm-hmm. I think that's the one advantage Rebels has for over Clone Wars for me personally, is that it does have this kind of consistent story to it. I love the Clone Wars too, but it's a far more spread out, bigger picture, whereas this is much more localized. And I'm really enjoying that, right? Like, just seeing Zeb and he's ready to go, and they, you know, they're taking out stormtroopers. I'm like, yeah, this is Star Wars. This is fun. You know, I just really like the way it begun, until Ezra somehow mind manipulates, you know, this Walker guy into destroying his own troops. It's like, okay, apparently, you know, you can do that. You know, we've never even seen a Jedi Master in the prequel era do that, but okay, you can do that.
Well, you wouldn't see a Jedi Master do that.
That's a good point.
Because, you know, what we learn here is that Ezra is gaining power, not necessarily strength. He's gaining power by tapping into the dark side because he's using that Sith holocron. And so when he does this, it's, you know, it's kind of cool, but it's also really kind of scary, because this is a sort of power that only leads one direction, and not to the band, but sorry, and it's not a good one. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest things that you see throughout this episode, is that Ezra is willing to go to places that aren't good in order to keep his family safe. And he doesn't really care if it's the quote-unquote Jedi way. And I've got a more of a response on why Yoda might say the last of the Jedi you will be to Luke, even if Kanan and Ezra are still around by the time of the OT, when we get towards the end of this episode. But, because I'm not certain either of them are walking the path of the Jedi anymore, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but right now, especially without Kanan's guidance, Ezra is definitely not walking the path of the Jedi. He's a force-powered vigilante who is got a teenage hot-headed temper streak, and it's leaning a little dark and grim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a really good point. You know, he is. You know, so I also didn't realize that this season takes place 3 years or 2 years after the end of season two. Did you know that?
No, that's not right. Who? Where'd you hear that?
That's what Joe told me. That so the first season starts 5 years before A New Hope, and now it's 3 years before A New Hope when this season starts. So it's
there's a gap somewhere between the two seasons, but the trivia gallery here for this episode says that this is 6 months after the events of season two.
Oh, okay.
I think,
I'm looking at the first picture. It just says sometime after the events of Malachor.
If you go to the trivia gallery on StarWars.com for this episode, which is different than the episode gallery, it says about 6 months have passed since the end of season two in the lives of the characters. So
okay. That's fair. So sorry, Joe, you were wrong. I actually like that it's only been 6 months then, because so here I'm just going to get this out there now, and if you're listening, you know, you can yell at me if you think I'm wrong or whatever, but my only main issue is I have no problem with Ezra, his character. I think he's being developed really well. I like what they're doing with him. My issue is just where it falls in our timeline. So this is still only like 3 or 4 years before A New Hope. And what bothers me is Obi-Wan says to Luke, you know, in A New Hope, you know, the Jedi are all but extinct. Yes, he does say all but extinct. So yes, there could be rogue Jedi still out there, and there obviously are some survivors of Order 66. And then he makes the comment about how Vader hunts down and, you know, murders the Jedi, which he essentially does with Order 66. I mean, he marches on the Jedi Temple and takes a bunch of them out. And I'm sure he obviously hunts down the ones the Inquisitors can't seem to get. But I don't know. My problem with it is it just feels like it's messing with the core of our mythology. And what I've been saying all along is I feel like Ezra diminishes Luke and the importance of Luke. And also, that's the main thing that was bothering me. But Joe made a really good point, you know, that he's like, Joe says, you know, to me, it makes Luke far more important because, look, yeah, Ezra is obviously very powerful, but he's not around, clearly. So something's going to happen to him. And I do hope he dies. Like, I think he has to die. I do not want him seeing him in Rogue One. I don't want to see him in some stupid future movie. Like, in my opinion, he has to die. Not just because I don't really love the character, but because it would really crap on our story, right? Like, Luke is the last hope of the galaxy. And I think, you know, if that becomes the case, right, if Ezra does become, he and Kanan become very powerful together, but they still just get manhandled by Vader, I think that just goes to show, like, oh my gosh, can anybody take him down? Which would actually increase the value of Luke.
Well, the other thing is the view of the Jedi that we got from the Clone Wars was from the Jedi's perspective. So there's a lot of stuff in there that they do that is just sort of normal, even though they're highly skilled and highly competent force wielders and that sort of thing. The view that we get of the Force and the Jedi here in Rebels is much more from, say, like Hera and Zeb's and Sabine's point of view. So it seems bigger. And so when we see Ezra and we see Kanan doing these things, it seems really impressive until you get someone like Ahsoka or Vader to show up. And then you realize just how far from the real deal they are. Mm.
That's a good point.
Think that's something that really clarified for me watching this episode. And then I was going to bring this up later towards the end of the episode, but since we're talking about this idea now, I'm going to go ahead and bring it up here. With the path that Kanan seems to be set on by the Bendu, because the Bendu, remember, we learn, and we'll talk more about him later, I'm sure, he's not a Jedi, he's not a Sith, he's the one in the middle. As he says. And it seems like he's going to become Kanan's new master, in a sense. Or at least send him on a different path. And it's not the path of the Jedi. And so while Kanan still calls himself Kanan Jarrus Jedi Knight, he's not really going to be following the path of the Jedi. And Ezra isn't necessarily following the path of the Jedi either. And if he comes around towards Kanan's point of view and they kind of go off on this separate force-wielding journey, than what we get with Luke in the original trilogy and what this response that Obi-Wan and Yoda give. I mean, the last of the Jedi will you be? You know, the Jedi Knights are all but extinct. That will be true. So they don't necessarily have to die, but they're not necessarily going to be Jedi anyways. And of course, this is very early on. But if we're getting this sort of new mentor that's not a Jedi, and he's going to send them off on sort of a, not necessarily a better or worse path, but a different path for these two characters, then maybe they become sort of that gray area like Ahsoka was, you know, who kept saying, I'm not a Jedi anymore, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that could be happening. That this is definitely a setup for that sort of possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. They're like the new spiritual but not religious crowd. Think about it. The PT, you have an organized religion, and then the OT, that organized religion is deceased, and it looks like by the time of the ST, it's fallen apart when Luke tries to rebuild it. So interesting. You know,
yeah.
Maybe it speaks to where people are now in their own in our spiritual cultural identity, which could be kind of mm-hmm. cool.
You could have them more on a path that, say, Chirrut from Rogue One is kind of on, or Lor San Tekka, who's part of the Church of the Jedi sort of thing. You know, something, you know, not quite Jedi, but still following a similar ideal. Since it seems like nowadays Star Wars is really trying to broaden the idea of the Force and everything that entails. I think you could see a very distinct possibility of that with these two characters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We kind of, you know, I mean, we talked a little bit about the start of this episode, right? I mean, you have again this, what exactly are they're doing again?
They're rescuing
Hondo. Yeah, they're rescuing Hondo because apparently he has some information they need. And then his little Ugnaught friend, what's his name?
Turba.
Turba, that's right.
Gets himself blowed up.
Yeah. you get this, again, like, very quintessential Rebels, very quintessential Star Wars, just kind of like this fun little rescue adventure mission. It's very clear that Ezra has become very powerful. I mean, Hondo even makes, you know, that remark, like, look, is that really Ezra? Mm-hmm. And I think is it Sabine that says, I'm not sure sometimes, or something like that.
Most of the time.
Right.
I think that's her response.
While he's like tearing into the stormtroopers with his new lightsaber. I mean, he's even constructed himself a new lightsaber.
And it's green.
Yeah. The last one was, no, that's right. The last one was blue.
Yep. I like the color, but I'm not entirely certain I like the way he's using it.
So it's clear that some time has passed and Ezra has become powerful. But we quickly learn that Kanan is not really part of the picture right now, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, Kanan probably feels very ineffectual now that he's lost his sight. He's really probably a little bit of in a depressed state. Not full blown depression type of a thing, but I think Kanan is just, you know, he's still recovering because those wounds are far deeper than the physical wounds.
Right.
As evidenced a little bit later on when he encounters the Bendu. You really did a great job alluding to this earlier, Jason, about how in the absence of Kanan, the Sith holocron has kind of taken his place.
Yeah.
And we do Ezra to a certain degree. He is, I guess this isn't necessarily a lot like Luke and Anakin. I think this is a typical human thing though. When we as human beings are attached to people, we do sincerely want to make sure that they're okay. And that's kind of what's driving Ezra to use the holocron. I mean, he has good intentions, but obviously good intentions can lead to bad results. You know, look at Anakin's story.
Right.
That's exactly what's going on is Ezra, what he last witnessed was the blinding of his master, the death, as they seem to have assumed about Ahsoka. They seem to think Ahsoka's gone, mm-hmm. Probably dead. So, you know, Ezra sees all these huge threats to his family, essentially. And again, that's really important. Again, this is why I do like Ezra's character, because Ezra is this kind of similar to Rey. He's got no family. He's an orphan. You know, he lost his family. And when we first met him, he was very reluctant to joining anything, probably because he doesn't want to deal with the pain of loss again, which is typical of a young person. But mm-hmm. he joins the crew of the Ghost. He becomes one of them. And, you know, he takes on this responsibility of, I have to be the caregiver. I have to make sure I'm strong enough and powerful enough to not let anything else happen to them. And that's where the Holocron comes in for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Kanan's essential removing of himself from the day-to-day operation of the team has created a vacuum, and Ezra has taken it upon himself to fill it, to fill that role of being the one who charges in from the front and keeps everyone else safe, since Kanan is not there in that role at this point. So, and he's using that holocron to learn how to have more power, because it seems like Kanan is sort of just withdrawn from almost all his responsibilities, including teaching Ezra. So it doesn't seem like he has much interaction with anybody.
Yeah. Even Hera, who's his lady, his gal pal.
Mm-hmm.
So
space married, as Teresa would say.
Hello, Mr. Abrams. By the way, I finished listening to Jackson's Tale and I was cracking up, kept dropping all my favorite stuff, man.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He knows all of your catchphrases.
Yeah. I enjoyed his Nickelback. That was real good. It was, oh yeah.
And he completely sprung it on me. I did not expect it.
Nickelback would be a really good like Sith soundtrack. Like whenever Ezra opens the holocron, she would go, oh yeah. Although that's a little bit like Macho Man, Randy Savage. So,
oh yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Oh my god.
So, well, then we finally. This is what I've really enjoyed with Rebels as well is. I feel like in the OT, they do a really good job of always giving you these interlude scenes with the villains, right? Like, what is the Empire up to? So, you know, and I think Rebels does a really good job of doing that. And the first one we get Tarkin right away in this with Governor Price coming to him. Is it Governor Price? Is that her title?
It is Governor Price.
Yeah, Governor Price. And, you know,
it's the first time we've actually seen her. She's been talked about a lot over the last two seasons, but it's the first time I think we've seen her.
Yeah. Interesting that it's a woman. I was always under the impression that the Empire was made up of white men only. That's the impression you get if you watch the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that because the Empire is bad guys. That's part of why they're like racist and sexist, you know. But it's interesting that we are getting women. Lost Stars, we obviously have a female Imperial character. And Force Awakens makes it very clear that there are women in the First Order. Again, I don't have a problem that there's women in there. I just think it's interesting because they were never there before. And I took that as an indictment of the Empire. Again, a further indictment of like, look how horrible they are. Like they're anti-alien. Well, there are still no aliens except for Grand Admiral Thrawn, which we'll get to. But anyway, so Governor Price shows up and, you know, they finally seem to have Lothal secure, but she requests the 7th Fleet, which I don't really know exactly what that is. But, you know, they're still...
I think that's something new.
Okay. But it's clear that they're still struggling with this rebellion. They're trying to snuff this thing out that, you know, the Ghost team is part of. I like that we've shifted away, and I remember Dave Filoni was in an interview where he talked about how he thought it was important to start shifting away from the Inquisitors, mm-hmm. being how close that we're now getting to A New Hope. And I like that. You know, it's very clear now that the Empire we're kind of focusing more on its military might, and that's what's going on here is we've come, you know, Governor Price is going to Moff Tarkin. He's not Grand Moff yet, but to Moff Tarkin to get a new fleet in and a new commander in. They're starting to see this more militarily, which I think mm-hmm. is kind of neat. So That's what we're getting here is now we're going to learn that there's going to be a new predator for our heroes. You know, season one, it was the Grand Inquisitor. Season two, it was Vader and these other Inquisitors. Season three, mm-hmm. looks like it's going to be Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Right. Right. And, you know, it's not that they think that the rebellion is that dangerous now, but they want to crush it before it becomes a real threat, is what it seems like the thinking is. You know, there are these pockets of resistance, but they want to make sure it does not become something more. And, of course, to do that, you need the best. And the best, well, he'll show up here in just a little bit.
Right. But, yeah, so going back through the episode, then we get the information that they rescued Hondo for, which is he reveals that there's this fleet of Y-wings that they could steal at Reclam Station. Now, Jason, you're going to have to remind me, is Reclam Station in Clone Wars?
No.
Okay, no, I don't believe so. I kept thinking it was. It just sounded so familiar to me. And then when we finally saw it, I'm like, this really looks like something we might have seen in Clone Wars.
It looks a little bit like the listening station that Anakin and Ahsoka and R2 yeah. ended up destroying back when they had that the traitor yep. droid. When R2 disappeared for a while, and they had to go find him, and they had that Goldie traitor droid.
Yeah,
it looks similar to that, but that one got destroyed as well.
Okay, thank you. But that's exactly what I was thinking of. I was like, this looks like that place where R2 fights that other R2 droid.
Yes. So. Yeah.
But that's a good point. It does.
It does look like a bit like a repurposed Trade Federation control ship, sphere. Mm-hmm. So you know, obviously that extension on it, yeah, but it does look similar.
Yeah.
So
and it very well could be. I mean, there's going to be a lot of those floating around that aren't in use after the Clone War.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, again, this is what I love about Rebels. Like, again, it's just like, okay, here it is. Here's what we're going to do now. Now we've got to go steal these ships. Right? Like, again, it always just like invigorates that like little boy Carl in me. That's like, yeah, that's what I want to do. I run around and just rescue some stuff, you know?
Right.
You know, so it's a really cool, little, you know, here's our next plot point. Here's what we're going to have to do next. Well, we rescued Hondo. Hondo gave us the information. Now let's go get these Y-wings. It'll help our fleet. General Dodonna, is he mentioned here?
He's mentioned at the end.
The end. Okay. So I'll save that. But what's big here is they promote Ezra.
Yeah.
So it's clear now that they do see themselves in a way as a military. Right? Like they're not just a bunch of like freelance rebels. You don't have titles like Lieutenant Commander unless you see yourself in some way as, some sort of assembled military.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's hints like that that give you the idea that the rebellion is forming in a little bit more of an organized fashion than they had been before. Even since season two, you know, which apparently, you know, obviously. The ends about 6 months before this season begins. And so even from then to now, it seems like there's a bit more of a formalized organization going on. Not to the extent that we get in the original trilogy films yet, but we're headed that direction.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then transitions into finally Kanan going to talk with Ezra.
Mm-hmm.
And he discovers obviously the opened holocron, and he's very, very indignant of Ezra for using it. He's pissed, you know, like how yeah. dare you, because you have to use the dark side to open it. So clearly Ezra's been tapping into the dark side. And Kanan's wicked pissed at him, but at the same time, Ezra kind of fires right back and says, "You're not around, dude. Like,
right.
What do you expect?" So, you know, again, Ezra is, he's like that obnoxious punk little kid, you know, and his somewhat father figure, who is Kanan, is absent. So, of course, you know, Ezra's going to do what he thinks is best to help himself grow and to survive. And that's really not his fault.
Yeah. And the one of the most telling things about this conversation, though, was Ezra was talking about how the Holocron has given him more power in order to keep everybody safe. And Kanan tells him, it's a trap. And Ezra says, not for me. Hmm. And that was one of the most telling statements in that conversation to me. That for whatever reason, that's the one that jumps out and has stuck with me. Is, you know, Ezra's like, not for me. And I'm like, oh, you're already sucked in. You know?
Yeah.
Ezra's farther down the path, you know, farther down that rabbit hole than he likes to think he is.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Good point.
But of course, Kanan being the...
It's a trap!
It's a trap! but Kanan being the de facto father figure, of course, takes it away from Ezra.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he takes his toy away.
Mm-hmm. You can't have this anymore. Yeah.
How dare you have these matches? You will start a fire. which much. Is kind of true. You know, it is kind of like playing with matches.
Mm-hmm.
So they leave to go on their mission, and Kanan has clearly taken up meditation again.
Yes.
you know, and that's when he hears Tom Baker.
Yes. Yeah. The doctor. I mean, the Bendu. I absolutely love this character. I love this character for so many reasons.
Well, so, you know, he's going to be summoned by this Bendu, which is, mm-hmm. you know, something we've seen teased, you know, right? It was in some of the clips that came out a while ago, so we knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting is that they have, again, and they did this a little bit in Force Awakens, they've been doing it with Rebels, is they've been going back to a lot of their early concept stuff from A New Hope, specifically this idea of the Ashlyn and the Bogan. Mm-hmm. Which is the light and the dark side, which were words that Lucas created. These were ideas of his that he eventually just kind of, you know, they kind of just get edited out in the long run.
Right.
But it's kind of cool seeing them back.
Yeah.
And I don't think he ever had something called the Bendu. I think that is a new creation.
No, the Jedi were originally called
the Jedi Bendu. That's right. The Jedi Bendu. So. Which is, hi, how interesting is that? That they were the Jedi in the middle, right? Maybe they weren't supposed to be all pure light or whatever. But yeah, so again, this is really throwing another curveball into our kind of mythology of the Force. Kind of like the Night Sisters did.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a very interesting character. And you know, you made the point that the Bendu becomes Kanan's master in this. Mm-hmm. And I really like this. I mean, there's so much about this encounter with the Bendu that just, to me, just really makes me think of, you know, Luke being trained by Yoda in Empire. It's a lot of that stuff about unlearning. It's a lot about, you know, moving past what you think are limitations into something new and whatnot. Again, this is what Star Wars is kind of all about. Man, actually, that's almost like a statement to us as Star Wars fans. Myself specifically, based on some of my own complaints, you know, to move past what I expect it to be and think it should be and move into something new. You know, I can teach you to see if you're willing. Well, you got to be willing.
Right. Right. He's so great. He's this ancient, Kanan calls him a force wielder, and the Bendu seems to be fairly amused by that statement. And then it seems like he's seen the rise and fall of the Jedi and Sith. Like we don't get a real idea as how long he's been around, but he's apparently been in this deep slumber for quite a while. And Kanan and the conflict that he has within him has woken him, and seems to be a bit of a busybody and wants to get involved and find out what's going on. I love it.
Yeah.
And
interesting that the imbalance of Anakin's fall doesn't wake him.
Yeah, well, it's also on a planet that's very far from galactic events, so.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, and this is just something that is making me interested in this. I wonder if the Bendu himself is blind just from age, because, you know, the way his eyes are, and I don't know if that's just because, you know, his eyes are very white, and I don't know if that's just because of the design of the character and that's what they wanted to go for, or if he's actually, you know, blind from old age. And it would make it very interesting if that's the case. And he's teaching Kanan to see again, similar to maybe a way that he had to learn to see.
Very interesting. Yeah, it could be. But he does teach Kanan to see in a way.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is really cool. Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them.
Exactly.
I mean, I think we all saw that coming at the end of season two. Like, okay, yeah, Kanan's blind, but let's never forget what Obi-Wan taught us.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we get, but we get it from a certain point of view this time around, a different point of view, if you will. And so it's just, it adds that new twist, that new aspect to the Force. So it's not just, you know, the Jedi and Sith as we're, you know, very accustomed to. It's this, you know, additional faction. I'm not going to say third faction, because obviously we've talked about, we've gotten quite a few of those in the last couple of years that are either have been or will be introduced. But he flat out says that he's the one in the middle, you know, he's between the light and the dark. And it's almost more of a, you get the idea that it's almost more of nature centered force aspect, you know, force use than any specific light side or dark side focused. You know, he seems to be much more open and fluid to sort of the forces of nature, if you will, or the force in a very raw, unfiltered sort of way.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, you know, more in tune to the living force. It's very Qui-Gon-esque.
I think the Bendu and Qui-Gon would have found a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important, though, that our story still, you know, the central story of the mythology of Star Wars, though, is the importance of the Skywalker story. And, you know, Qui-Gon's the first one to figure out eternal life. You know, I mean, these are all really big things that I just think it's important that as they continue this expanding our mythology of the Force, that they don't take anything away from what we have. And they haven't yet. And I'm sure they won't, and I hope they don't. But again, I'm just really curious as to how the Bendu is going to fit into our mythology and story of the Force itself. I love whenever we get new stuff like this, because that's my favorite part of Star Wars. But I'm just really curious how that'll work. But in the context of this episode, I think it works great, because in a sense, you know, the Bendu is kind of the voice of the Force, if you will. He is the Force personified in a certain degree, and that's what Kanan needs. You know, Kanan needs something to shake him out of his apathy and out of his sense of failure, probably. And that's exactly what the Bendu is it kind of calls him out of his isolation, his self-imposed isolation, and invites him to return to the world. The Bendu is the Rey of Luke's life. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, let's talk about Thrawn, Jason.
Yeah, Thrawn. Oh, this is, we got less of him in this episode than I thought we would. But I think that's good.
Mm-hmm. I do too. They teased him really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've teased him a lot in the trailers. And again, they've brought back the Thrawn that Timothy Zahn created, which, by the way, that I don't know. When does that Thrawn book come out? Do you know?
Not this year or next year? Early next year. It's April.
Oh, okay. So it's a ways away.
Yeah.
And I think it's about Thrawn up to where he is in Rebels.
It probably is going to deal with that battle that he mentioned that gave him his promotion.
Oh, yeah. Which, by the way, I'm very curious about, right? They must have heard about my maneuver at the Battle of Tanab. It's the Battle of Tanab, Lando. We still, I don't know, you know? I want to know what the Battle of Tanab is. But yeah, no, because it's interesting, because it's my question then is, who's he fighting? You know, who's Thrawn fighting? Like, was it just a rebel force? Like, they still don't seem to be that organized. But hey, right. Maybe they are, or... You know, God forbid they bring the Yuuzhan Vong into it. I know they teased that about, you know, mentioning them in the Clone Wars or something.
They were thinking about teasing them in the Clone Wars. So
that's what killed my interest in the EU. I hope to never see the Yuuzhan Vong brought back to this galaxy. Stupidest creation in Star Wars. In my opinion. I know a lot of people like them, but I never liked the Yuuzhan Vong. But it would be cool, though, if Thrawn was, like, fighting some, like, unknown deep space threat that we had never heard of. And, you know, because that was kind of always the folklore of Thrawn in the Legends canon was kind of, right, like, the Empire did not allow non-humans into the Empire, let alone, you know, high ranks. But Grand Admiral, again, this is all based on Legends, but I could be wrong. It's been a while, but... I'm pretty sure Grand Admirals were appointed specifically by the Emperor himself.
Yeah.
So the fact that Thrawn is, you know, has this station implies that Emperor clearly knows who he is and is fond of him. And the fact that he's a Chiss, you know, he's not a human, is huge. So it would be kind of cool to think that Thrawn was out there thwarting some big outside threat that wasn't the Rebels. I just think that would be really cool. So maybe to a certain degree, Thrawn is kind of a savior to our galaxy far, far away. I don't know. You know, I just think that would be really cool to have that in there. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Now it's going to be cool because obviously, like you said, this is just a tease of him. And his mission is to crush the rebel fleet that is being formed before it becomes a threat. And obviously, you know, as we see as Ezra and the rest of the crew of the Ghost rescue the Y-Wings, liberate the few Y-Wings that they've still got left, Governor Price says, oh, we've got, you know, three cruisers here. Thrawn says, no, that's not the fleet. Let them go. We'll get them later. You know, he wants the big catch. And he's willing to make a few sacrifices to get that. And obviously we'll get more into, you know, what he does and how he's going to do this as the season goes on. But he's here for something big. And, you know, we don't know the extent of that yet. But obviously he's well respected and feared. So... I'm really excited, and he seems every bit, you know, from what I remember from the Thrawn trilogy, he seems every bit that character. So he came off very well, in my opinion, as far as where he was, you know, as far as who he is as a character compared to what we know of him from from Legends. So,
yeah. Yeah, you know, and he's brought in to look at the bigger picture, just like Vader was at the beginning of, you know, season two. I mean, season one ends with, you know, Moff Tarkin coming off the shuttle and saying to Kallus, like, I've brought, you know, the Emperor's solution to this problem of yours. It's Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of what Grand Admiral Thrawn is. He, you know, as this rebellion is becoming more centralized and more militarized, you need a military mastermind to come in and undo that.
Right.
So I think it's really cool that it is Grand Admiral Thrawn. Again, it's the story shifting now. Kind of this rise and I guess maybe potential force danger with Ahsoka joining the team has been thwarted by Vader, which needed to be thwarted by Vader. You don't bring in right. Grand Admiral Thrawn to fight Ahsoka. Mm-mm. But now that it's this growing military potential threat to the Empire, you bring in a military mastermind, which is Thrawn.
Right. And of course, we only have the briefest of introductions mm-hmm. to him. So in the show, obviously in the trailer, we've seen more trailers and clips. We've seen more of him. But in the show thus far, we haven't really seen the extent of his strategic abilities yet. We just know he's really intelligent and he's brought in to tear the rebels apart piece by piece.
Yeah. That voice actor is phenomenal.
Yeah. Lars Mikkelsen, who is the brother of Mads Mikkelsen, Galen Erso in Rogue One. So
that's really, yeah, his voice is perfect.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Thrawn should sound like.
It's great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
And I do want to mention, I think it was my favorite shot in the entire, probably on all of Rebels. Was that?
Let me guess.
Okay.
It's as it fades from his eyes yes. to the planet, and we just see his eyes glowing.
That was so cool.
The crossfade for just a second or two longer than they should have.
Yeah, that was such a cool
shot. It was good. Yeah. It was good.
How menacing, right? Like, he's got those red eyes. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. So well put together, that shot.
It was good.
Yeah, that was great. So, but anyway, we should probably round this out a little bit so we don't have to go into all the little specifics of what happens, but, you know, they do. They go off to rescue these Y-Wings, and kind of intercut with that is kind of Kanan's training. Mm-hmm. So it's again, that's it's a great juxtapositioned storylines going on with Ezra leading the team in without Kanan and making a lot of bold decisions on his own that puts the team in danger, puts the mission in danger, and at the same time you have Kanan who is coming from the low to the high, right? So like, one story is about, you know, our heroes falling, and the other is the hero rising. So it's mm-hmm. going to take this, you know, Kanan's coming back to the world to come in and salvage what Ezra has kind of screwed up.
Yeah. And the one nice funny thing is that Kanan gives the holocron to the Bendu.
Yeah.
Because the Bendu seems completely unfazed by it. When the Bendu takes it from Kanan in the first place, he's like, what is this? It's a Sith holocron.
Careful, it's full of evil.
Careful, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, really? You know, and he opens it. He's like, he's amused by it. He finds it entertaining or intriguing.
Yeah.
It's a little toy, you know, a little something to mess with. And he's, an object cannot, you know, pull you to the light of the dark. The temptation for power, yes, but an object cannot corrupt you is what the Bendu says. And so he gives it to the Bendu as a gift. And I think we're going to see Ezra have an encounter with the Bendu at some point, because we do see that holocron later on in the trailers. At least I'm assuming it's the same holocron mm-hmm. In the trailers with Ezra and Maul. So I feel like the Bendu's role isn't done yet either.
Oh, and definitely not. Yeah.
So we've got the Bendu on one side and Thrawn on the other. And these are two threads that have just been sort of, you know, teased at in Thrawn's, on Thrawn's side of thing and sort of set in motion with the Bendu. And I feel like these are going to be two of the threads that are, going to be pulling us through the season. So I'm super excited because I'm very interested in both of those threads. And at the same time, we've got this thing where we're building up the Rebel Alliance too. We got some of these Y-Wings. We rescued some of them and they're going to General Dodonna's cell.
Yeah.
Which is obviously the one that we see on Yavin 4 in A New Hope. So you know, things are moving. Things are taking a very definite shape in Rebels right now. And I like what I'm seeing. Everything seems to be taking a very intriguing and entertaining route that I'm a big fan of right now. So,
yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that that Dodonna is a cell leader, right? Like, there are these rebel cells that are starting to finally come together, which is no wonder the Empire is becoming somewhat, you know, nervous about this.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of great places that we're going to take this season. A couple quick things I want to hit on, though, is, you know, how this does end. You know, Ezra does make these kind of foolhardy decisions. The team listens to his orders, even though, you know, they're there on a recon mission, and Ezra is essentially going to just, I mean, he's calling what he thinks is the best shot. Like, they're destroying these Y-wings. Like, if we don't act now, we're going to lose them.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand why Ezra's doing what he's doing, but he's not really thinking it through. He's not informing, you know, when Hera contacts him, he's very vague and just, you know, he's not calling upon the proper assistance.
Right.
And at the end of the day, the thing that Ezra actually costs them, which is huge, is the Phantom.
Yeah.
You know, they lose the Phantom at the end of this episode.
Yeah, that was surprising. I did not expect that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, that's a huge part of what our rebels have used so far. I mean, the Phantom is, it's part of the Ghost. It's part of the team. And Ezra screwed things up and lost it.
Yeah. And the Y-wings that they got aren't even for them to use. So it's not like they can use the Y-wings instead of the Phantom now. You know, the Y-wings are going somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how they accomplish those, you know, quick in and out missions without it now.
Right. They're going to need a new ship.
Right. Yeah. Or something to replace the Phantom with.
Yeah.
And it was funny. I was reading the trivia gallery earlier, and the production team was calling this episode the Phantom Menace. Because they were going to, you know, be destroying the Phantom in it. So I just thought that was funny.
Well, the episode ends, Jason, with Thrawn telling the, you know, to let them leave, because he's well aware this is not their whole fleet. It's clear that Thrawn has the, you know, bigger picture end game in sight. You know, this isn't worth our time right now. Let's draw them all out and then put an end to this.
Right.
Which, again, is an important statement to end this opening season, you know, the season opener with, oh, crap, like, you've got this military mastermind now who knows what he's doing. He's coming after them, right? So it does end with this sense of threat, which is important to starting the season.
Right. Right.
And they don't even know who he is, right? That's the cool thing, too, is the rebels right now, they have no idea what they're up against, which makes it even scarier, because we as an audience... No. They don't have a clue.
Yeah. No, they don't know that he's out there yet. And it's kind of scary, because we don't know what's going to happen to these characters when they actually run into Thrawn. And there will be a run-in with Thrawn, at least one, probably more. So.
Yeah. So. So this episode ends with Ezra getting reprimanded, kind of, you know, losing his command.
Yep. His rank is stripped.
He gets humbled. And he accepts it, which again shows that he's grown through the episode. He has accepted that he screwed up. And I think it's really good, too, that, you know, when he loses the Phantom and he kind of cries out, Kanan, where are you? You know, I think he realizes, like, he's kind of lost without Kanan. He needs Kanan.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that Kanan comes back. I love the dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah.
And
right now, Kanan is definitely my favorite character. of the Ghost Crew, by far.
Yeah, he's been by far my favorite all three seasons. But I love how he says to Ezra, you know, I'll always come back.
Yeah.
You know, there is, he is so committed to Ezra. He lost that sense of commitment for a time, but he's back. And again, like, our story is ready to roll.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing is Ezra makes it a point to ask about that Sith holocron. Hey, what'd you do with it? It's safe. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Ezra's still thinking about it.
Right.
So, which is why, one reason why I think Ezra's going to have a run-in with the Bendu. He's going to go looking for it. And
yeah, something's going to happen that Ezra felt like he's responsible for and still doesn't have enough power to control things. So he's going to seek out what he thought was helping him grow in power.
Mm-hmm.
So this season opener definitely has us ready to go. And while, you know, just actually talking through this now, I really want to just go sit down and watch it again right now, which I might. but I really do think this season really does a great job of setting us off on a new course, which is really important. Yeah, it doesn't have the epicness of season two's premiere, but it's definitely like, I think it's settling us in more for more story. Like, get ready. Like,
yeah.
Last season, there was so much big stuff, whereas now I think it's, like, okay, it's almost like the Filoni and the creators are probably like, we got to pump the brakes a little bit here, you know, and get back to just telling the story of the rebels, which I think is what we'll get.
It was one of those things where there was so much going on, and that while there was an underlying story with, you know, the Kanan, Ezra, Ahsoka, and Vader that carried on for most of the season, you know, was popped up, you know, on and off throughout the season, there was a lot of this story over here, that story over there, the story over there, you know, a lot of all over the place kind of stories. Where with this season, it looks like we're setting up for something fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of story threads that we're going to be watching unfold throughout the season in a much more linear fashion than what we've gotten so far.
Yeah. I can definitely see that happening. So, anyway, anything else you want to say about this season opener, Jason?
I just can't wait for Saturday to come so I can watch the next episode.
I know. It's so great to have this back, you know, and this is going to
really
be,
is.
And this will be with us all the way up till Rogue One.
And beyond.
Yeah. So
to Rogue One. And beyond.
I'm just so pumped to see more of this season, and glad Kanan's back, ready to roll. And I'm just really excited to see Thrawn.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't be doing, you know, weekly episodes on Rebels, folks. You know, when something big happens, probably when we get the mid-season break, we'll talk about Rebels again, and obviously we'll talk about Rebels when the season is over, but it came back in a big way, and after the celebration trailer that we got, you know, we obviously had to talk about this, so
yeah, we did.
I'm glad we did, and I cannot wait to see where it goes from here.
It makes two of us, Jason.
All right, but we've got something really big for us coming up next episode.
Yeah, we do. I'm excited, Jason. So I don't know the exact date. I don't think you and I can look at. We should look into it just so we know. But it was early October when we recorded our very first episode of the Wampas Lair podcast 5 years ago.
Yeah,
which is just crazy to think. Because there's so many Star Wars podcasts that like lasted maybe a year or two, if that, sometimes less, and they fall out. So it's an accomplishment, I'd say. And Star Wars Report is one of them as well. Like, they've been around for a while. Sarlacc Pit is as well. You know, the guys at Rebel Force Radio, they've been doing Star Wars podcasting a lot longer than we have in all sorts of different, you know, incarnations. But that being said, 5 years is pretty damn cool. And the fact that it coincides with our 200th episode is also pretty cool.
Yes.
So, yeah, like that, we're pumped for our next episode, and in our next episode, again, we are encouraging you, our Larians, those of you who listen to us, to send in questions you'd like to hear us discuss on the next episode. We want to make that episode kind of about you guys, because we don't have like a main topic. I know the one thing I'd like to close the episode with, Jason, is just talking a little bit about how we feel our fandom has changed in these last 5 years. Because again,
yeah,
it's different. It's been really.
And I even think we got a question about that too. So that's perfect. Oh,
nice. Well, wait, so we'll segue out with that one then. but yeah, no, I'm really pumped just to kind of hear what, you know, those of you who've been listening. I know there's some people out there that have been listening all 5 years, or even folks that haven't been listening 5 years, but they've gone back and listened through everything, even the early ones that sounded like crap because we were using onboard microphones and everything.
and you know, I was recording in my garage at times, so
yeah,
early on. Oh man,
just trying to think how many girlfriends I've been through since we started.
you've had one for quite a while now, so
I have. You know, yeah.
Has it been since our fourth anniversary that you?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's been almost 2 years now. It's been,
there you go.
That's been the best adventure of all. But no, this has been a pretty darn good one. It's been so wizard, Jason.
I loved how Zeb made that remark about something.
Yeah.
He was like, it was so wizard. It's like, you got like the cool guy to say wizard. Anyway.
Oh man. But yeah, no, Jason, I'm pumped to do episode 200 next week. And yeah, again, if you're listening, we really do encourage you to write your questions. Now, that said, if we get like a ton of questions, we probably won't get to them all. But please send them in to us. The earlier the better, because Jason and I are going to compile a list probably early next week so we can actually put some thought into the questions too, so that we're not just responding on the spot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited for that, Jason.
Yeah, I am too.
And we have a new print to reveal when episode 200 comes out. We have, of course, our kind of our third wheel in the Wampusler, Joe Hogan.
The unofficial third host.
The unofficial third host and everyone's least favorite Star Wars artist. I'm just kidding. We love Joe. But Joe has done a really great little print for us for our 5-year anniversary.
Yes.
Which we'll pull out for you guys when that episode comes out.
Pretty sure it's my favorite yet. So.
Yeah, me too. Joe really crushed this one. And it's he sent it to me last night and I sent it right off to Jason. Jason and I both agreed, like, that's killing us not to just put it out right now. But
exactly.
we commissioned it for a specific reason, so we'll wait for that reason.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jason, also for episode 200, we have kind of a fun little poll idea.
Yeah, you came up with this one, and I really like it. So I'll let you explain this to our Larians.
Okay. So I thought, you know, for episode 100, we did a matchup where Jason beat me by one vote, thanks to Joe Hogan, the jerk. Rather than pitting us against each other, we thought it'd be fun with this 200th episode to do a poll where we ask you guys what you think would be a good theme song for us from the Star Wars music. So not secular outside Star Wars music, but if you had to pick one song from Star Wars, whether it's a theme or a cue, what song would capture the Wampa's Lair? So if Jason and I were walking into the Royal Rumble of Star Wars podcasts, what song would we be walking down the aisle to?
And we're not looking for something to replace our show introduction or anything. We're just, you know, if we were to come out at a celebration panel or something, what would be playing? You know, that sort of thing. You know, a Royal Rumble, as you were saying, you know, what describes our show? And what is the essence of us as a show? I'm curious to see what you guys think, because I have no idea.
I think it would be the Emperor's theme.
I am the podcast. It's been a while since I've brought that one. Did Steve come up with that?
Yeah, I think he did.
He did? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, please let us know what you think would be the the Star Wars tune that would introduce us, the Wampa's Lair, to the world at large.
Yes. If we put together a Wampa's Lair trailer, what would the music be?
That'd be fun.
Oh, man. I'm excited.
I am too.
It's
going to
be awesome.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for 200.
Nor can I. That's just crazy.
I mean, granted, you know, with all the special extra episodes we've done, we're definitely way over that number. But as far as official numbers,
yeah.
Official episodes.
Yeah.
It's still a great milestone. And I cannot wait.
Yeah, we're a big fan of patting ourselves on the back, if you can't tell. So
it's just exciting.
It is exciting. And we want you all to join in that excitement.
Yes. And so, Carl, if they want to weigh in on that matchup or respond to our episode today or send us some questions for episode 200, or not matchup poll, sorry, but anyways, where can they do that?
I'm glad you asked, Jason. As the story goes, they can find us over on Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampasLair, or shoot us an email at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, maybe even leave us a review, pass the word, maybe get us some new likes in before episode 200 next week, maybe a new review before episode 200 to wash out the last one that was very mean. So that's all the info.
All right. And anything else you want to get out there before we wrap up this episode?
Can't wait for 200, Jason.
Me either. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 199, Steps into Rebels. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time on episode 200 here in the Wampa's Lair.